So when I graduated from graduate school, I had this, desire, this need really to really celebrate the accomplishment. It had been kind of a long slog. And I was like, really, you know how it is. It's like you're excited you finished and you're really happy you finished too, you know. And so I wanted to mark this new beginning and celebrate that accomplishment. And I thought, you know, what's the greatest dream I've ever had? To fly. How am I going to do it? I mean, I knew it probably wouldn't be smart to just, like, jump off the nearest roof, you know, if I wanted to continue into my new beginning. That'd be a real new beginning, but that wasn't the one I was after. So I thought, well, I could go skydiving. Yeah. Right. And so I was really quite relieved when I got to the place where we were going to have like a morning lesson that it was going to be a tandem jump. So I would have an instructor literally like attached to my back, literally got my back, right? So this was relieving. All morning I was getting ready and then we go up in the little plane and now it's time. And he says, put your foot out in the wing and, you know, get on out there. And it's like a small plane, so you put your foot on the wing. You have to kind of duck under, you know, like a double wing, right, and go out. And so my foot is out there on the wing, and it is so windy out there. And my foot looked so tiny. It was just like this vast sky, this tiny foot. And it's like, what am I doing, right? Am I really going to go through with this? And something, you know, just he's attached to my back. So it's like, go. And so I went. And it was the most exhilarating experience ever. I mean, you've seen how it looks, right? If you haven't done it yourself, your arms are kind of arched back, your legs are arched back, and there's just like full-on wind, so it's very fast and exhilarating, and you're falling. You're free-falling to the earth. I mean, when you sort of get that through your mind, it's like, wow. So I am so glad I had that instructor because I got so lost in the reverie, forgot everything I'd learned, basically. And he is gesturing wildly, like it's time for me to pull the cord, right? He's like, because it's like the altitude watch, you're supposed to look and see and then pull the cord. And I'm like, woohoo! So I get the cord pulled, and then we go right into this upright position with a parachute. And suddenly it went from like high speed, complete exhilaration, to absolute utter peace. And it was just so beautiful, this bird's eye view of everything and being, you know, I'm flying, I'm up above the earth. This is incredible. Because I pulled the cord a little bit later, we landed in a very appropriate position on our knees. Prayer position, right? Gratitude, earth once again. But you know, what I thought about really with this is not only the amazing experience that it was, but how relieved really I was to be in partnership with someone else, to have somebody else helping me along, right? To have that backup behind me. And so I wonder for you, have you ever done something really big, maybe kind of scary, and you found comfort in the fact that you realized you were not alone, that you had support in whatever you were doing? Or have you ever had the experience, maybe you have it all the time, that you have a sense that, you know, God's got me. I'm covered, you know. In this particular situation or always, I have this sense that you know, we can do this, that I'm not acting alone. Or maybe you live in that kind of consciousness where you know that you are always in this conscious, co-creative partnership. And that's the way you begin your day, and that's the way you move through your day each day and into the visions that you hold for your life. If you've done any of these things, you already are working the law of co-creation. You are already flowing with a spiritual law. The law of co-creation says that conscious partnership with spirit co-creates boundless life possibilities. Conscious partnership with spirit co-creates boundless life possibilities. Spiritual laws are laws. It's like gravity, right? It always works. And so it has a truth in it that is foolproof. It always works. So if we are in conscious partnership with Spirit, we are in that co-creating process of boundless life possibilities. It's when we get unconscious of what we have available to us, right, that we get into a little bit more trouble. Well, as we start this series called The Create Laws, it's called The Create Laws because create actually spells where we're headed. Today is the law of co-creation. Next week, we'll do the law of resonance, the law of expansion. We get a double A, law of attraction and appreciation. The T is the law of tithing, and the E is the law of expression. And so these are all, again, spiritual laws that work when we work them. And when things aren't working for us, it might mean we're not working them, right? So we're going to take a look a little bit more carefully. So has anybody been watching the Olympics? This is a great example right before our eyes of boundless life possibilities being co-created in partnership with Spirit. Now, I'm sure every athlete that is at the Olympics has a various belief system, right? They all approach these things in a different way. Some of them maybe would consciously say that they're on a spiritual journey. Some of them would say, no, that's not even what I'm doing. But what we can see with our spiritual eyes is that these athletes, to perform these amazing feats, cannot be acting alone by their own will, their own energy, their own power. There is something, a greater wind beneath their wings. There is a greater process happening through them that they have reached a high peak, the higher self, whatever it is that we might use in the language. Like I said, all of these folks are going to probably use different language. But we can see before our very eyes this co-creative law in action through that kind of excellence. And you can see it in all kinds of fields, right? And experience it yourself at various times when you're in that flow. Can you think of an achievement in your life that you are particularly proud of? Let me just take a moment to pause. And as that achievement comes into your mind or your memory, can you also think about how it happened? You know, what kind of support did you have? Did you receive spiritual guidance? Maybe divine ideas, resources to help you, to support you? Sometimes we just forget and we think we have done things all by ourselves. But usually it's the I am, the truth inside of us that is working with us with a greater, you know, we have all of our, if you don't know, the Unity five basic principles are painted on this wall over here. And so there's an interaction happening. We're talking a lot in the series about co-creating life, right? That's our third principle. Those first two principles are really key, that there is an allness, there is a permeating essence of Spirit in the universe, and that the I am, the divinity, this truth within us, is our access point, is our knowing of this who we are in action. And this is what comes into play in our co-creative process. This is what comes into play in the law. So far we've been talking about really great things that you dream about, that you imagine, that you've achieved in your life. But what about those times, I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but the times when you feel like you're doing everything you're supposed to and results are not showing up. Or even worse, these huge challenges and unwanted situations are coming into your life and you think, I've been praying, I've been meditating, I've been journaling, I go to church, I have a community, I'm always learning, I'm working it. Why isn't it working for me? Anybody ever get there? Yes, we have lots of nods. We have those experiences. And it's that why me, why place we go into, right? Why me, why God? That was the question that Job was asking. And off we go. That was perfect, John. Thank you. So Job was in this place of, why me? You know, and do you know his story in the Hebrew scriptures? Well, I'm going to remind you of the story. Job was known throughout the whole kingdom as a righteous man, a good, faithful man, a family man. He was wealthy. He had lots of land, and he had lots of workers, and he had tons of children, and he was married, and livestock and camels. I mean, life was really, really good. He was clipping along. You know those moments when everything is just rolling along. And then all of a sudden, this series of calamities come upon him. I mean, it gets really bad. First, his livestock gets stolen. It's like two different occasions. First, it's the cattle and the pigs and the goats. And then later, it's the camels. And so there are two experiences where things are stolen from him. Then there's a fire that burns on his land, and it takes out the whole servants' quarters, all the workers, but not only the quarters, but they're in them. They're sleeping, and none of them survive. Then this great storm comes upon, this big wind, and all of his children are feasting inside the house, and the wind takes out the whole house, and all of his children die. I know, it gets worse. It gets worse. This is why we have a hard time sometimes reading the Hebrew scriptures. But the metaphysical interpretation is where the power is, and we're going to get there. So then Job gets boils from the soles of his feet all over his body, all the way up to the crown of his feet. And he's just like, what? So you'd think the one person who's left, his wife, would stand with him. It's the scripture says, and then his wife reviled Job. And told him to renounce God and die. I mean, this story is an extreme example, right? And so what's the point of it all? Well, the question that is in the story of Job, that the story is attempting to answer, is why do bad things happen to good people? Have you wondered that one before? Why do bad things happen to good people? Well, we're going to look at that. And in the process of this story, it also offers us an advanced spiritual understanding, because it really is advanced spiritual teaching in the story. And it reveals something about the partnership that we have with Spirit. So after all the devastating loss, this really beautiful thing happens. Job's three friends come, and they just sit with him in silence for a whole week in his grief. They're just there bearing witness, holding space. And then when the silence is broken, the friends start to want to help. They want to say the right thing, right? Like we do as good friends. They don't understand why their good friend Job is suffering so much, and they want to help. The problem is they have very limited spiritual understanding. They have more sort of religious, you know, kind of moral ideas about how things work. And so out of their religious theology, the only thing they can figure is that Job must have done something wrong, and he's being punished, right? So they start telling Job, you know, you must have done something wrong. And they even come up with some examples of possibilities. Now, can you imagine being Job, having gone through all that you've gone through, how helpful that would be? Not so much. So Job's getting pretty agitated, and he's denying that he's done any errors, and he's just increasingly becoming, you know, lamenting his experience, which is sort of exacerbating it. You know how it is. We start lamenting our lot, and it's like pretty soon it's more awful, and it's more awful, and we're multiplying the awfulness, and then we just completely down in the dumps, right? This is sort of the cycle that Job is in with this. And so the Bible metaphysician, that was a very long word. The Bible metaphysician, or the Bible metaphysics writer, Elizabeth Sand Turner, she's written some great books she's a Unity, old school Unity teacher at the time of, I think a little bit after the Fillmore's actually, or probably during Charles' lifetime. Anyway, she writes in Let There Be Light, which is a metaphysical interpretation of the Hebrew scriptures. She says, when we fret over our troubles, she's talking about Job, of course, wondering why we have them, feeling a sense of self-pity and injustice, we're seeing them with limited human sight. And no healing can come about. But what Job needed was a new and totally different point of view. He needed to see his situation with spiritual eyes. We see how Job does what probably a lot of us can relate to. He goes back and forth from feeling faithful and exclaiming his faith to deep despair, and then back and forth like this, right? Anybody ever have that experience at all? Yeah. And he finally says, I don't even know where to find God anymore. Have you ever been there? Yeah, that's the dark night of the soul. We often think the dark night of the soul is all the stuff that happens. A lot of stuff can happen and bring us there. It may seem like nothing happened and brought us there. It's just a time of spiritual aridity. It's like, where's God? I don't feel the presence anymore. I'm just not feeling it anymore. So we have those moments in our time, and this is exactly where Job is. Now, we think it's a terrible thing when we're going through it, because we don't know when the feeling's going to come back, or if it's ever going to come back, or what's happened that caused us to lose that sense of the presence. But actually, it's a really rich time. Because think about where Job is now. Everything's been stripped away. He's empty. He's open. He's more receptive. And that is when Elihu comes in. Elihu is this young man who's been kind of circling around, listening to what's going on. He heard all the friends. He heard what they were saying. He probably was, you know, just waiting for his chance, because Elihu has a different perspective. He has a deeper spiritual teaching to offer to Job. And he's a younger man, so he has to kind of justify as he begins to speak that I may not have the same age as you, but I have something to offer. But metaphysically, of course, him being younger is important because it's telling us that there's something new here. There's something fresh here. There's a new way of seeing with spiritual eyes, and it does land with Job. Elihu says to Job, "Stand still and consider the wondrous works of God." And Job hears him and finally quiets his mind. He finally stops all the lamenting, the resisting, and the fighting, and just opens up and quiets his mind and gets still. I imagine that in that stillness, maybe he even hears, you know, "Be still and know that I am, and you are never alone. I've always been here, available to you." We come in connection again with the presence. We get that encouragement again. Job shifts from his focus all on the outer conditions of life to the inner world where the answers lie. And with his openness, everything is shifting in terms of his relationship and his understanding of spirit. He's going from, my God is a punishing and rewarding God, and I was on the good side, right? And I was getting all the rewards. A little bit of righteousness, a little sense of righteousness there, you know, which God calls him out in a minute. And then he's shifting from that to this inward place, even to a co-creative partnership. He's going to become more clear on what his role is. So then God speaks in this verse and is telling Job that about the creative power he's dealing with, reminding Job of the creative power that is available to him, and still kind of implying, you've gotten a little righteous, Job. This is what part of what God says. "Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understood. While I marked off all of its dimensions, surely you know. Who laid the cornerstone while the morning stars sang together and the angels shouted with joy? Tell me if you know all this. What is the way to the abode of light? And where does the darkness reside? Can you take them to their places? Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the belt of Orion?" The I am is the ultimate source of co-creativity. And this voice of the I am, starting by the voice of a young man who is kind of pointing Job in the right direction. This happens in our lives, right? We hear some kind of message through maybe an unlikely messenger, and we begin to get pointed in the right direction, and then we hear that inner voice that tells us the truth that we've been missing. That there is this power, this creative power that is available to us, and we have a role in the co-creative dance, and we're not the leader. So that puts us in the follow position, right? Sometimes we think it's just this equal dance, but it's not the roles. It is an equal dance, but the roles have specific places. We have a specific place in the dance. What we learn from Job's trials is that self-righteousness doesn't serve us, that the ultimate creative power partners with us, requires an openness, a humbleness, a stillness, a willingness, a receptivity. And that we have to drop our resistance. We have to stop feeling sorry for ourselves and justifying why this shouldn't happen to us because we're good people. And just be there to meet the circumstance, knowing that it is here for our good. It is here for our evolution. There is a blessing in it all, as hard as it may be to see it. That's why they make the circumstances of Job's life and all that he loses so extreme. So we'll really get it. So when, I don't know about you, but I guess righteous is a hard word maybe, but we can get a little smug in our spirituality, you know, especially when things are going really well, right? Like, I got this. I figured this out. This is cool. Yeah, I know all that stuff. I've read all those books. I know how to do all those practices. I don't have to do those anymore. I got this, right? Because things are going well. And then we recognize, and we get into a little complacency, right? And we maybe forget to keep up our practices or whatever it may be. But what we need to know is that we are always evolving, that we are always growing. When things are great, we've got energy to keep evolving, to go deeper, to expand ourselves. And it's in those places that we want to keep up. Right? We want to keep up the momentum. We want to keep ourselves open and receptive to whatever it is that is available to us. I am teachable could be our affirmation to walk through life with. I am coachable. I am teachable to stay in that kind of space that allows us to remember our part in the co-creative dance. Job's story ends well. So I just want to make sure that I get to the happy ending so we can sew that up, right? Because we all love a happy ending. And Job's ending is really great. He has a new understanding, a complete new way of spiritually understanding himself, his life, and the world around him. And he's given a double blessing of all the goodness that he had before in his life, a double blessing of it all, so he can enjoy his life even more so, enhanced and multiplied. I used to work at Silent Unity, the International Prayer Ministry for Unity, and every prayer associate had at their desk the scripture, and it was to remind us of our role in the process. And the scripture verse goes like this: "It is not I, but the Christ within that does the work." It is not I, but the Christ within that does the work. It's a great mantra to remember when we get in these situations where life might feel, we may be a little spiritually complacent, or maybe even feeling a little smug or righteous about what we figured out. And so to humble ourselves, to open ourselves, to remain teachable and coachable. Life is a co-creative dance. And so our work is just to be a part of that dance, but also to remember our role, that we are the follow and Spirit is the lead, that the I am of our being is the lead, and that our personality self, our ego self, the rest of our being is the follow. So a couple of weeks ago, I think maybe mid-June, we had a message on how to manifest. And I want to bring that slide back because I think it's helpful in this process. You know, we all have innate masculine and feminine energy, regardless of our gender expression. And it kind of goes like this in tandem in the dance within us. The feminine opens, the feminine perceives, the feminine asks for help. And the masculine affirms and claims what it is we're bringing in. Then the feminine receives and the masculine acts. But what if we add then the co-creative part of what it looks like when spirit is in the dance within us? It looks a little bit like this. The feminine opens, perceives, and asks. Spirit offers vision, divine ideas. The masculine affirms and claims. Spiritual energy is attracted to that. There's a buoying up of that, a responsiveness to the truth that is being spoken. The feminine receives. What does the feminine receive? What spirit gives? Guidance, inspiration, encouragement, comfort, whatever we need. The masculine acts, and spirit delivers divinely ordered resources, the energy to follow through. So we know that we are all one. We aren't all these parts and parcels, but it helps to parcel it out to see how all these energies are working together. And how we, remembering that there is this co-creative process going on, there's these different energies within us at work, may help us to identify, oh, right, I'm acting only out of my masculine energy, or only out of my feminine energy, or I forgot, I'm in a co-creative dance with spirit. And so it's that kind of remembrance that brings us back into alignment with what it is that we want to manifest, and how we will meet the challenges when they come. So what are you going to do? What are you up to? What do you want to create? What are you dreaming about these days? Throughout the journey, whether you are meeting up with something that's a challenge in your life right now, or you are in that dreaming phase, or you are in that manifestation role of what it is that you want more of in your life, or a deeper experience of in your life, all of it is this co-creative dance. And if you lose sight at any point, you can come back like Job did when Elihu told him about the spirit within him to get still so he could listen, to get still so he could be reminded. The poet T.S. Eliot says, except for the still point, he says, there would be no dance. There would be no dance without the still point. And there is only the dance. That's life, right? But we have to have the still point, or there will be no dance. There will be no movement. We won't see the movement. We won't experience the movement if we don't also have the pause, have the reconnection point. So the alpha point of co-creation is the feminine state of consciousness. That's where it all begins. That's where we go to restart. That's where we go when we get stuck. We start again at the alpha point, which is the feminine state of consciousness. When we start, when we restart, when we get stuck, we go into that feminine energy within us. It's that energy that receives, that perceives, that listens, that gets still, that asks, right? And then we're back in connection with the leader of our dance. We can ask spirit then, will you lead the dance again? Because I lost track of my role. I forgot what I was doing here. Job has that kind of change of heart. That's exactly what happens for Job when he opens to a new understanding. He opens to his feminine side. And that's where he can finally get still. That's where he can finally become receptive and listen. And suddenly, a new dawning, a new way of being, a new understanding. And there comes the manifestation process and the multiplied blessings. So whatever it is that you are up to, whatever it is that you want to bring forth in your life right now, ponder that, consider that, bring that into your heart, and then remember that all of this is at work, this beautiful dance is happening. Just remember your part. Your part is to remember who's the leader in this, that I am, that true spirit, that essence will always lead the way if you let it. So let's affirm together this journey that we're on, this beginning of a co-creative process with the law of co-creation. Together, I am in conscious partnership with Spirit, co-creating boundless life possibilities. So it is. Thank you all to those of you who are online and outside. Blessings, blessings.